Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Palin's deal with the moderator. You can ask whatever questions you want. I'll answer whatever questions I want. Maybe we'll make the new standard that on this show. After the news, your reactions to last night's debate. And we'll explore some of the under-discussed aspects of last night, not just the showbiz elements, but, oh my goodness, there was actually policy in that debate. Also this morning, 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 10, immigration, why the hottest of the cultural hot buttons has gone missing in the campaign. Plus, it's time for a break from all that. We will have comedy writers from Saturday Night Live, The Daily Show, and The Onion all joining us together, all coming up after the latest news. Thanks a lot for listening.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Paul Brown. The outlook for the economy continues to look more grim. The closely watched federal jobs report shows that non-farm payrolls fell by 159,000 jobs in September, the sharpest decline since 2003. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
The job losses are no longer centered in a few areas, such as housing and financial services. All sorts of companies laid people off, including many service industries. The unemployment rate is at 6.1%. Nigel Galt is an economist with Global Insight.
This is the biggest decline so far in this cycle, so it's worse than anticipated. And this, it adds together with a lot of other evidence that has been coming through over the past couple of weeks, indicating that the economy took a marked turn for the worse during the third quarter. The recession is deepening. We're going to be seeing more big declines in employment over the next few months.
Consumer spending is slowing, auto sales are down, manufacturing is getting squeezed. Galt says all this is a strong argument for the government to pass the financial bailout package. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
The House of Representatives has started debating the bailout plan for the nation's financial institutions. A second House vote is scheduled for today. The Senate approved a revised bill on Wednesday after the House rejected it on Monday. Here's NPR's Debbie Elliott with more.
Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says leaders from both parties are trying to round up new votes for the package. They need a dozen or so members to change their position from Monday night when the House rejected a similar bailout plan. Pelosi says Congress must intervene.
If we do not act, hardworking Americans and millions of people will see the American dream evaporate. So that's why it's very important to pass this legislation, and we're working hard to do so.
The Senate bill would allow the government to incrementally buy up to $700 billion in bad debt from struggling financial institutions. It also includes about $150 billion worth of popular tax breaks. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, the Capitol.
As the economic problems deepen, troubled banks and insurers are trying to recover from exposure to bad debt. Today, Wells Fargo announced that it is buying Wachovia in an all-stock deal worth more than $15 billion. Wachovia, which was once known for its conservatism, expanded rapidly within the past several years and found itself loaded down with shaky debt. The Wells Fargo deal for all of Wachovia puts an end to a planned Citigroup acquisition of Wachovia's banking operations only that was to be backed by the government. Meanwhile, the insurance giant AIG says it will sell several of its business units to pay off a big government loan made to keep it from going under. Stocks are up this morning on the Wachovia news, the Dow up 134 points, the Nasdaq Composite up 41. This is NPR News.
And this is WNYC New York at 10:04. Good morning, I'm Mark Garber. Mayor Bloomberg's move to change the city's term limits law and run for a third term has thrown the city's political landscape into disarray. Several candidates have already announced plans to run for offices being vacated by term-limited officials. Comptroller Bill Thompson is currently term limited. He plans to run for mayor. And City Councilman David Weperin is one of several candidates vying for his office.
You know, I already indicated I was running for comptroller. You know, I'm looking already ahead. I've played by the rules. Other people have played by the rules. I think it would be wrong to change those rules by City Council legislation at this stage.
The council has the power to change the term limits law, but several members have expressed opposition to doing so without a voter referendum. Two referenda affirmed term limits in the 1990s, but it's too late to get the question on the ballot this November. New York City Mayor Bloomberg, if he gets a chance to run four more years in office, all other candidates will have their work cut out for them. A new Quinnipiac poll released today shows that New York voters favor Bloomberg over any other political candidates by a margin of 5-1. Governor Patterson and legislative leaders this morning are getting ready to discuss the faltering economy and its impact on the state. They'll meet in Manhattan to find ways to reduce spending and increase revenue in the budget beginning in April. A report from the Division of the Budget says unemployment in New York hasn't been this high since 2001 after the September 11th terrorist attacks. No legislative action is expected before the November 4th elections. Partly sunny and breezy today, high 69 with wind gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Mostly clear tonight, low 51. And for the weekend, mostly sunny tomorrow, high 68. Right now, cloudy, 57 degrees in Central Park. It's WNYC New York at 10:06.
Support for NPR comes from Universal Pictures, presenting Flash of Genius, based on the true story of an ordinary man and the American dream he wouldn't give up. Now in theaters.
I may not answer the questions the way that either the moderator or you want to hear, but I'm going to talk straight to the American people and let them know my track record also.
Okay, so that's the instant classic from last night's debate that you've probably heard a few times already this morning. And I've decided, based on that and based on Gwen Ifill allowing her to do that, that I'm setting a new standard for all the guests on this show. I will ask whatever questions I want, and they can answer whatever questions they want. And you, of course, can say whatever you want about last night's debate at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Our phones are open now, as is our comments page, which people have already posted a few gentle barbs on at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You be the pundits. You be the fact checkers. You say what you want at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But our political director, Andrea Bernstein, and I want to get beyond the shallow media coverage of the debate last night. We can say in a sentence that they both probably exceeded expectations. And yes, she was winking at us. But beyond that, there were any number of disagreements on the issues and some surprising issue statements on topics ranging from gay marriage, the legal status of Vice President Cheney when he's being investigated, and some more. So we'll talk about those things as well. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein is back with us now, still in St. Louis, I believe, where she attended the debate. Right, Andrea?
Yes, I'm in the land of the K's. I'm at KWMU in St. Louis, and thanks to them for letting us a studio to do this. And I'm, of course, in the caves because I'm on the other side of the Mississippi River. By the way, Brian,
yes?
Do I have to answer your questions or
no?
Can I speak directly to the listeners?
Absolutely not. I want you to go over my filter. but I want to read you here's the gist of the comments that we're getting. And, you know, there are various ones, but this one kind of sums it up. Robert from Manhattan posted about 10 minutes before the show just some headlines from various newspapers. Newsday, Palin recaptures the magic. Washington Post, Palin digs herself out. New York Daily News, Sarah Palin holds her own against Joe Biden. Watching Washington on NPR, what Sarah Palin did seemed to prove that is that she's qualified to be a vice presidential candidate. And then Robert writes, really? Have our expectations become so low that a candidate for public office need only smile, wink, and act folksy so as to charm middle America? So Andrea, if it was all about expectations, you know, maybe it comes back to what we were discussing yesterday. Remember President Bush's first performance in the debate against Al Gore in 2000 when the media was writing him off as a simpleton, and he was able to string two sentences together. And so it was like, oh, yeah, he was okay.
Yeah, she probably did herself a favor by messing up with Katie Couric, because now that she can get a day of headlines like that, and, you know, it's sort of once again, she defies expectations, comes out swinging. And, you know, I think that especially sort of in the middle section in foreign policy, she showed herself to be well-versed. She didn't mispronounce anybody's name. She had a better presence than Joe Biden, who couldn't seem to figure out where to look. He was looking at Gwen Ifill for part of it. He was looking at the audience for part of it. Then he sort of clicked into gear at points and looked straight at the camera. She was direct. On the other hand, you know, there was a lot of details that were not in what she had to say. And I was really hoping to get much more of a sense of how her experience as governor of Alaska would inform her performance as vice president. And I think that at times she did talk about that, for example, when it came to energy policy. But I would have liked to hear a whole lot more of that. And it was just a not very deep burrowing in on the issues in the part of Sarah Palin. I still want to know more, and I'm wondering whether voters out there also want to know more.
Right. By the way, the CBS Evening News, you might have noticed, since everybody's talking about the Katie Couric interview now, seems to be trying to capitalize on that. They took out a full-page ad in the New York Times today with all kinds of quotes about Katie Couric, reviews of her. Couric got answers, brilliant technique, superb intensity, et cetera, et cetera. So Sarah Palin gave the gift of gravitas to Katie Couric along the way here.
You know, Katie Couric did a great job, and I'm sorry that we haven't seen more of her in this long primary election, because she did what, you know, so many of us fail to do when the heat is on, and she kept asking the follow-up questions. And she didn't drop it because she was being stared down. For that reason, I think that we really got some answers.
By the way, who was Sarah Palin winking at?
It wasn't at you, Brian? Directly at you?
Well, I saw Pat Buchanan this morning say he thought it was directly at him. I'm just glad Dick Cheney...
I'm winking now. Can you tell?
No. You can. I'm going to ask you to wink at whoever I want, and you can wink at whoever you want. I'm just glad Dick Cheney and John Edwards didn't wink in the 2004 debate for different reasons that would have been very creepy in either case.
Can we talk about Dick Cheney?
Yes. Let's talk about Dick Cheney, because that's really the center of one of the issues. Actually, let's see. I have some clips lined up here. Let's see if we have that one. Okay, can we go to this one first? This is 1A5, Palin on VP flexibility. Do you want to set this up?
Well, both of the candidates were asked what they thought the role of the vice president was. And I think that this is really one of the more interesting questions of the debate, because Cheney, as vice president, has so redefined it, not only in terms of the kind of enhancing his advisory role and enhancing his portfolio in the White House and making himself part of all the key decisions, but also really saying constitutionally that he gives the vice presidency a different status. And obviously, I think that is a key question for candidates for vice president, and they were both asked what they thought of the way Dick Cheney had interpreted the Constitution, and Sarah Palin went first.
Well, our founding fathers were very wise there in allowing through the Constitution much flexibility there in the office of the vice president. And we will do what is best for the American people in tapping into that position and ushering in an agenda that is supportive and cooperative with the president's agenda in that position. So I agree with him that we have a lot of flexibility in there, and we'll do what we have to do to administer very appropriately the plans that are needed for this nation. And it is my executive experience that is partly to be attributed to my pick as VP with McCain, not only as a governor, but earlier on as a mayor, as an oil and gas regulator, as a business owner. It is those years of experience on an executive level that will be put to good use in the White House also.
And so, Andrea, what did that answer tell us?
Well, you know, it's obviously the second or third time I've heard it, and I'm still not quite sure, but I did hear her say, I agree with Dick Cheney that there should be a lot of flexibility. And the question was whether it's the vice presidency is a part of the executive branch or the legislative branch. So it sounds like she is not challenging Dick Cheney's interpretation, although then she did pivot quickly to the discussion of her own executive experience, which I think is a different issue. Joe Biden, though, he disagreed strongly, right?
Right. Now, we don't have a clip of him, but obviously the issue is, as you said, whether Cheney can avoid producing some documents that Congress is asking for by saying he's neither a member of the executive or legislative branches.
Right.
Exactly.
Biden dismissed that. He said the only role for the vice presidency in terms of his legislative role is to break a tie in the Senate, but that doesn't mean that he has a legislative office. I actually thought that was a very interesting constitutional difference between the two of them.
And, you know, when that came up last night during the debate, you and I were doing this group blog with listeners and with some other WNYC people, Bob Garfield from On the Media. And I asked, did Palin just support Cheney's interpretation of his role protecting him from handing over documents that a court had just this week come out against? And when she said flexibility, that's what I thought she was doing. But then a lot of people responded to me that no. She just really doesn't get the exact legality of the question, and so she's just dancing. Or she understood it. I would imagine that's something that she would have been well briefed on, that that was an obvious question for Gwen Ifill to ask, given that it's an immediate current legal controversy surrounding the office of the vice presidency, and that she was probably, you know, coached to just kind of dance around it because she didn't stand to gain anything by answering it one way or the other.
And there is, I think, what we are all already noticing is a sort of Palin-esque trope, which is that when she answers a question about do you support someone's interpretation of the Constitution, she answers it by saying the Constitution is good. So it's kind of, you know, she answers a kind of tough question that could actually separate the sheep from the goats with an answer that appeals to everyone. I mean, who is going to say the Constitution is not good and our founding fathers were not wise?
All right. Let's play some other clips. You mentioned the energy discussion, which was really interesting. Here is Joe Biden talking about a difference between a Sarah Palin position and a John McCain position.
I agree with the governor. She imposed a windfall profits tax up there in Alaska. That's what Barack Obama and I want to do. We want to be able to do for all of you Americans, give you back $1,000 like she's been able to give back money to her folks back there. But John McCain will not support a windfall profits tax.
So, Andrea, can you fact check that? Did she support a windfall profits tax on the oil companies in Alaska?
She did.
And McCain does not support it at the federal level.
So far as I know, Biden is correct. Although, if anybody wants to challenge me on that, I would be open to hear it. However, I do know from talking to people in Alaska that she did get a lot of admiration as governor because she pushed through this oil tax, which was unpopular. But the idea is that part of it would go back to the people of Alaska as cash, simply, in their pockets. You know, a family in Alaska can now get something like $10,000 in cash from the government just for living there from the oil companies. And part of it went into funding some infrastructure projects, including her pipeline for natural gas that she wants to get through. So she did get a lot of admiration for that in Alaska. I mean, it's interesting because both of them went after each other for their disagreements with the top of their ticket. And you know, she did it with Biden when she said, you know, you were brave when you supported the war, and why are you now just falling in line with Barack Obama? She answered it. She said, you know, I'm a maverick. I'm not going to agree with John McCain on everything. You can expect that from me. And you can, you know, then she said, I'd like to convince him on ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge drilling, and that was when one of her winks came. Biden never did address his disagreements with Obama, and I was thinking about that because when I was watching the debate, I thought, you know, why isn't he disagreeing? Why isn't he saying anything? But afterwards, I thought he had a pretty single-minded mission, which was to talk about John McCain and link him to George Bush and not so much try to defend his own record, although he did, in several cases, defend Obama's record. So I'm wondering how all of that shuffles out.
Right. Well, one of the posts on our comments page that's pro-Palin, anti-Biden, talks about Biden's factual gaffes and says he's a perfect example of why people hate Washington, D.C. politicians. And the example that he gives is he votes for the war resolution, aggressively defends its validity, then midstream changes his position during the battle. Talk about stabbing the troops in the back. How can anybody trust Obama, Biden, that they say anything to get elected, even if they contradict themselves doing so? So in Biden's case, Palin did bring that up, and he didn't answer it really directly, did he, about how he was, you know, kind of more for the war than Barack Obama was in the first place, and now has joined that team?
No, he didn't. And he sort of, you know, looped around to, I'm going to speak my mind, that's why people like me, which was clearly one of the talking points. I heard it a lot from the spinners in the spin room last night.
And that's just the same version of what Sarah Palin said about answering what she wants.
It is, although she sort of, you know, kind of was a little bit more direct and a little quicker to pick up the bait. I mean, Biden did, you know, have some Washington speak. He said at one point, if past is prologue, he mentioned LIHEAP, which is an energy program. He used, you know, a lot of what we sometimes call $10 words, you know, which are sort of sometimes hard for everyday people to understand. And, you know, when she you can tell I'm not a Washington insider because I don't understand what all these votes are. I mean, on the one hand, I think that there was an element of, you know, sort of batting her eyes and saying, oh, you Washington people, you're, you know, too clever by half for me. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that taps into something that people feel about Washington insiders and about Obama. I mean, there is, I think, a vulnerability for Obama going forward is the trust factor. And I hear it a lot from voters. I don't know where he stands. I don't understand his positions. I think in his own debate on Friday night, he had a little bit of trouble with that, and he came off with some lack of clarity. And I think if he has any vulnerabilities going forward, and especially into the next debate, it is settling those doubts that he knows who he is, he knows what he's done, he knows where he's going, and mm-hmm. it's all part of a consistent storyline.
A lot of the comments on our comments page really attacking the mainstream press for the way they've interpreted the debate. Laura from Staten Island, I was annoyed with the discussions after the debate. Clearly, Biden was much more informed and better all around. They lowered expectations so much that as long as Sarah Palin didn't have a major blunder, she came out with a positive review. AWM from the UWS, who won the debate? Apparently, those who want or need to make the stretch are telling us that Palin succeeded by not performing miserably. Can we really afford to set such a low standard for our leader? So that's one, probably the most common thread on our comments page. Continuing forward. Phyllis in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. As soon as I can get my cursor to your line. Actually, can you put Phyllis on line 8 up from the control room? Phyllis, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, Brian. I'm almost paraphrasing those two comments that you just read because to me, the debate was a mockery, not only of the debate form, but the fact that the analysts considered her a viable object to even comment on was a mockery of the whole campaign.
Well, let's not go that far. There she was.
She made my spine squirm. She was a wind-up doll with this incessant, bright-eyed smile that never changed. She repeated the script from cue cards, and many of them were falsehoods that she repeated and McCain had repeated before. She did not only mispronounce but misname the leader of the Afghan forces. The whole idea that she wasn't going to answer the questions and proudly said so. And then the analysts who considered her even something to compare to Biden, who is so intelligent and so wise and such a man of integrity.
Phyllis, I'm going to leave it there and get some other people on. I don't know, Andrew, about, you know, a lot of commenters, a lot of people on television have noted the mispronunciation or getting the name wrong of the commander in Afghanistan, but she only got it wrong by a little. I mean, that probably doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting things in the you know, sort of I'm suspecting that on the comments page, the people that think that Sarah Palin didn't deliver enough, that there's a gender gap there. Based on my conversations with undecided voters who tend to be mostly women, people were craving details. And looking at sort of the pundits, I detect a bit of a gender divide, that there's a sort of sense from some, you know, women commentators that she didn't deliver enough in terms of specifics. And, you know, it's a strange thing because, you know, you watch a debate and you're kind of looking for the quick two-step and the savvy line and the entertainment. But in this election, the mood of the country is, you know, people are so worried and people are just, you know, especially the women, the people who have to put together the family budget are very anxious, and people do want more than, you know, a great debate performance and even, you know, clear versing in policy issues. People really want to know where you're going to take the country. And I think that, you know, for Sarah Palin, there's a contradiction because I do believe, she, you know, at one point she said after just endorsing regulation on Wall Street, she said government should get out of the way. And I think that, you know, there is more that I would like to know about the details of Sarah Palin's policies that, you know, I was hoping that we would get to in the debate last night and that are still a question. And my guesses are still a question for a lot of voters out there.
Right. Well, in terms of getting to them in the debate, we also have several commenters who were very unhappy with Gwen Ifill. Gwen Ifill did a terrible job as moderator, writes John. She refused to hold Palin to answering the questions asked. Was she afraid of being accused of being an Obama supporter if she acted as a moderator? And, you know, Bob Garfield from On the Media posted on our group blog last night that he thought Gwen Ifill was chilled by the fact that she has this book coming out about race and politics in the age of Obama. And she was, you know, some Republicans were raising questions about why she was even selected to be the moderator if she's about to publish a book like that. And I don't know, did you think she was pulling her punches?
I didn't. I mean, I think that the, you know, this debate was a whole lot more tightly formatted than the Friday night debate. And the format left room for much shorter answers and for less follow-up. So what Jim Lehrer could do on Friday, really sort of pressuring and pressing and leaning on the candidates, there wasn't really the space in this debate for Gwen Ifill to do that. Now, you know, could she have felt chilled by some of the comments? You know, it's hard to get into her head and know, but, I mean, she's a, you know, consummate professional. So I wonder, had it been a different format where she could have exercised some more will of her own, whether we would have seen that.
Mike in Forest Hills, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I don't think the debate is going to help Sarah Palin become vice president because I don't think it's going to change Obama's lead. But this debate was won by Sarah Palin for herself. She has now guaranteed that she will be a major national figure for the next many years rather than go back to nothing after this election, which would have happened if she had done worse in the debate. So she was the clear winner, mm-hmm. not for the election, but for herself.
It could well be. I think she would have to follow it up and, you know, do more. But she certainly saved herself from being kicked off the ticket, which I don't know if that was seriously being considered by the McCain campaign, Andrea, but it was certainly talked about a lot by some conservative columnists who, you know, who thought that she was going to really help lead them down the tubes here.
I don't know how they could have ever considered such a thing. I mean, there are some people who are voting, and they've told me, for Palin, not McCain.
Yeah. Right. They couldn't. I mean, it would be too much of an admission of bad judgment on John McCain's part. So good for her that she did that well, either for herself or for the ticket. Let's play another clip. Now, let's see. This is the thing that you referred to, I guess, where you thought that she left a contradiction between calling for more regulation and calling for getting government off our backs.
You said recently that higher taxes or asking for higher taxes or paying higher taxes is patriotic. In the middle class of America, which is where Todd and I have been, you know, all of our lives, that's not patriotic. Patriotic is saying, government, you know, you're not always the solution. In fact, too often you're the problem. So government, lessen the tax burden on the private sector and on our families and get out of the way and let the private sector and our families grow and thrive and prosper.
And Andrea, I want to play in WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein is with us from St. Louis for just another couple of minutes where she attended the debate last night. I want to play one more exchange, which you and I both thought was very interesting and has not gotten much discussion this morning. And it's on the topic of gay marriage. The question from Gwen Ifill was very simple. Do you support gay marriage? We'll hear Biden, then Palin.
No, Barack Obama nor I support redefining from a civil side what constitutes marriage. We do not support that. That is basically a decision to be able to be left to the faith and people who practice their faith, determination, what you call it. The bottom line, though, is, and I'm glad to hear the governor, I take her at her word, obviously, that she thinks there should be no civil rights distinction, none whatsoever, between a committed gay couple and a committed heterosexual couple. If that's the case, we really don't have a difference.
Is that what you said?
Your question to him was whether he supported gay marriage, and my answer is the same as his, and it is that I do not.
Wonderful. You agree. On that note, let's move to foreign policy.
Okay.
Yeah, let's talk about that clip. Actually, I'll ask you anything I want, and you can answer anything you want. What did that exchange mean to you?
Well,
with respect to foreign policy.
Okay, with respect to foreign policy, I thought what Joe Biden said was fascinating. No civil rights distinction. When I hear that, I think, okay, so he means that in all kinds of things, you know, he mentioned hospital visitation, but no civil rights distinction would mean immigration law, that you could have a civil union with your partner and be recognized as a U.S. citizen. It would mean changing the tax code so you could file joint taxes, changing adoption laws in many states. So to me, that was actually a step further than I've heard any of the Democratic candidates talk about in this campaign. Mostly people say, I support civil unions. I haven't heard that exact language, no civil rights distinction. Now, Sarah Palin also seemed to say that, she seemed to endorse a kind of the idea of a civil contract, although she, you know, and then she made clear that she has gay friends, dear friends, she said, but she stopped short of endorsing gay marriage. I mean, clearly it's interesting that a Republican candidate for president in 2008 feels they can't have what might be perceived as a hard edge position
right
against gay unions.
Yes, but Gwen Ifill concluded, and I guess the candidates concluded, Palin said it, that they agree. So this is a far cry, I guess, from what George Bush would have said.
I think it is. I mean, I think it's quite a difference in their policy. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, John McCain clearly has not made gay marriage an issue in his campaign. There is this ballot measure in California which would overturn California's Supreme Court decision allowing gay marriages to take place. But I do think it's a measure of how different things are in the country with respect to the ballot potency of gay marriage. Remember, an anti-gay marriage ballot measure in Ohio was credited in part with Bush's victory there in 2004. And to a large extent, I mean, I know there are people out there that this issue is very, very important to, but as a way to move elections, its time may be past.
Listeners are still posting on our comments page. Darius, do we really need another person in the White House who cannot pronounce nuclear? Didn't Jimmy Carter used to get that wrong, too, the same way?
You know, regional pronunciation. I don't hold it against people.
And JG, details of Sarah Palin's policies. Sarah Palin has no detailed policies. All she did was recite generalities and well-rehearsed talking points, no policies. Al, for all the people complaining about the Sarah Palin low expectations, blame Saturday Night Live and Tina Fey. Republicans are the ones laughing now. David in Howard Beach is going to get the last word. David, you're on WNYC. What did you think about the debate?
Brian, I watched the debate with great interest, and I'd like to tell you that I think my four grandchildren, Ryan, Noah, Hannah, and Julian, are really some of the cutest and most adorable grandchildren that a person can have.
In other words, I'm going to ask whatever I want, and you don't care what the moderator wants you to say. You're going to talk about your grandchildren.
I greatly appreciate your new policy, and you can rely on me to call in and talk about whatever I wish to talk about from now on.
Okay. David, next week I'm going to ask you to talk about nuclear power.
I will talk about my wife, actually, at that point.
Thank you for your call. I'm sure your grandchildren are lovely. And WNYC political director Andrew Bernstein in St. Louis at the scene of last night's Palin-Biden debate. See you later.
See you, Brian. I'm winking at you.
Oh, yeah, me, right. And later this afternoon, Andrea and I will record this week's edition of Digesting Politics, our weekly web-only podcast on the presidential race. You can sign up for Digesting Politics, the podcast, for free at WNYC.org.